Did we almost go off the air? Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're going to stick around for a while, as long as you can take it. You know, I understand. I really understand. If you know, we're on every night for 3 hours, I don't know how much of the program is carried in your city or on your electronic device, but we're on for 3 hours. Nobody can stand this for 3 hours. We have to, because I have to work, but stick around as long as you can, all right? This hour is sponsored by, I'm not sure how to say, Duckin' Over? Let me look at the list here. Good God, he's sponsored all 3 hours? He has a message. Mike Malloy must survive. Yeah, I'll go for that. Thanks, Duckin' Over. How about this? Okay, thank you. Mike Malloy must survive. Can I put in a plug for somebody that also must survive? Back in 1996, a guy who I did not know at the time, but just about the time we were getting ready to move to Chicago, this guy went on the internet. He had one of the first political humor sites. I'm talking about Bart Kopp. And a lot of you know about BartKopp.com. BartKopp.com. A lot of you know about this website. I used to talk about it more, and I haven't been lately. I love that website. It's one of the best websites on the net. I mean, it's just incredible. He's been hanging on for, what would this be, 15 years? 1996 to 2011 is 15 years. And I want you all to do me a favor. And I'm really asking you to do this. Go to his website. Go to BartKopp.com. And just check it out. See if you like it. See if you think it deserves to continue. And then take whatever action that you think is appropriate. He's got a section way down. It's old style format. I mean, when the page loads, it starts at the top and then you just scroll down. There is so much stuff on Bart Kopp. It'll take, I don't know how long it'll take you to get through just one issue. That's what he calls it, an issue. He also has Bart Kopp Radio. He has a lot of stuff going on. But like so many of us who are trying to make sense of it all, I think, you know, he hasn't called me or he hasn't said anything to me, but after reading that little bit down at the bottom of, near the bottom of his webpage about can we talk, I have a feeling he needs people to do a couple of things. It's not just contribute money, although that would help. Read what he said down there at can we talk. When you get to it, before you get to it, just enjoy it. It's one hell of a website. It's one of the best websites I have ever come across in all these 15 years. I mean, there may be websites out there more sophisticated or more have more bells and whistles, but I'll tell you what, you are not going to have a better time than you'll have if you go to Bart Kopp. Not my site, not any site I know. Okay? So check it out, BartKopp.com. If you'll do that for me, I will love you and be true to you forever. A little bit later on the program tonight, I'm going to use a term that was used on Morning Joe this morning and CNN this afternoon. And it is a crass, that's all, just a crass reference to a male sex organ. It's nothing that nobody has never heard. It's very simple. But in the context of how it was used this morning on MSNBC's Morning Joe, it just I don't know, it just struck me as kind of funny, especially who it came from. So we'll get to that a little bit later. That's a warning to all the censors out there or the program directors who don't like me to, you know, the language I use on this program, the language I use, and this little simple four-letter word, and it's not the first part of cockroach. It's not that. So I'm going to use it a little bit later tonight because I want to play this. I want to play this piece of audio that we have. Ducking over. Thank you. Cool. Pat Robertson has crawled out from his sepulcher and spoken. Jesus, this guy is scum and filth. And I'll tell you what, he's the type, if any of this religious horse hockey really existed, he's the type that would be the first one that Yahweh or Allah or God or whoever would just pinch his head off and kick it into hell so that people could play soccer with it down there. But he came out today and said, this is according to Right Wing Watch, it may have been yesterday, he said, quote, "In history, there has never been a civilization that has embraced homosexuality and turned away from traditional fidelity, traditional marriage, traditional child rearing, and has survived. There isn't one single civilization that has survived." So you say, what's going to happen to America? Well, if history is any guide, the same thing is going to happen to us that happened to Sodom. It's going to be destroyed. Because New York State voted for same-sex marriage? Pat ought to follow up on that and tell the rest of the story of Sodom. In the first place, I listened to a bit of audio, and you'd think a genius like Pat Robertson, who is, God's best friend here on Earth, Pat would be a little bit more familiar with the reason God decided to punish Sodom in the Old Testament stories and mythologies. Had nothing to do with homosexuality. Had everything to do with the fact that they were selfish, greedy bastards, not unlike Pat Robertson. But Pat ought to tell the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that Lot and his wife and his two daughters escaped. What had happened was that God really got pissed off when he sent an angel down there to check things out, and the angel got raped. Then he sent another angel down to warn Lot. And what's Lot's wife's name? Sarah? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Huh?
Salty.
No, she turned into a pillar. Anyway, so Lot and his wife and his two daughters escaped. And, God being the capricious little jokester that he really is back in those days, he said to Lot, "Tell your wife not to turn around and take a look back there. If she does, let me think. I know, I'll turn her into a pillar of salt." Not seasoned salt, just regular salt. So, obviously, the woman turned around because, she's a dumb woman, right? And that's the point the Bible is trying to make, the Pentateuch, or that part of the Old Testament. They're trying to make the point. Women are stupid. You can't trust them. Look, we warned her. Look what Eve did. Now look what this one does. Oy. So Sarah, or Lot's wife, whatever, turned around and looked, and she turned into a pillar of salt. Okay, so Lot and his two, and obviously died. So Lot and his two daughters fled. And they fled into the desert, and they were all convinced that they were the last people on Earth. I mean, that's the kind of viewpoint they had. Well, Sodom must be the only city on Earth. Really? Well, he just destroyed it, so we're all alone. So what happened? The two daughters decide to rape the old man. And they do. They get him drunk. This is in the Bible. They get him drunk. And on the first night, one of the daughters goes in and has sexual relations. The next night, and she tells her sister. And her sister says, "Oh, really? Okay." So the next night, the sister gets him drunk again, and she goes in and climbs on Lot and has sexual relations with him so that they both will become impregnated. Now, Lot, of course, is one of the forebears Solomon and David and Jesus was of the house of David and oops. What does that mean? What does that mean? But, you know, old Pat always leaves that out, doesn't he? So, according to Pat, because the state of New York decided to allow a certain class of people who have heretofore been denied the right to make a marriage contract, to allow them to make a marriage contract vis-a-vis the U.S. Constitution, Pat Robertson is here to tell us that God is now going to rain fire down on the United States. Past the hour. I know there's a lot of serious stuff I should be talking about. It's just hard to get cranked up here. You know? I mean, I got a whole stack of stuff here. June, deadliest month in 2 years for U.S. troops in Iraq. What else is here? Public workers strike in Britain. Over the same thing that public workers are being fired over here. Man gets past airport security with invalid boarding pass. That one really pissed me off after what we go through. From the Sydney Morning Herald in Australia, global train wreck coming. 10 of the craziest things Michelle Bachmann has ever said. Number of beach closures due to pollution rose last year. All this stuff. But before I get to it, there's this. This may be the most important thing. For those of you who are familiar with the Christian Bible, or as I call it, the New Testament, the Gospel of John quotes Jesus as saying, I am the true vine. The true vine. Well, some people in eastern North Carolina think they may have witnessed a literal demonstration of that. There's a utility pole about a mile south of Kinston, North Carolina. And it has attracted attention in the last week or so from people who say that the kudzu climbing up this pole and clinging to it resembles the image of Jesus on the cross. Yeah, here we go. Somebody named Kent Hardison goes by the pole every day on his way to work at Ma's Hot Dog House. And his first reaction, common here in that part, the same way here in Georgia. I mean, kudzu is just, it's horrible. It's just an unstoppable alien vine. But the attitude in North Carolina when it comes to kudzu is to, you know, go after it with Roundup herbicide. Roundup. You know, our good friend Roundup. Monsanto, Roundup, the stuff that causes birth defects and, you know, makes your child be born with no head. Oh, no, wait, that's in Iraq. Makes your child be born with two heads. That's what we do in the South where it concerns kudzu. We don't give a tinker's damn about birth defects. Damn, man. We just want to stop the kudzu. But anyway, this guy, Kent Hardison, he said that was his first thought, but then he had second thoughts, according to the Kinston newspaper. Hardison said, you know, I glanced at it, and it looked like Jesus. I thought, you can't spray Jesus with Roundup. Now, of course, as you know, you can see the face of Jesus in everything from sheet metal to a grilled cheese sandwich. But seeing the depiction of the crucifixion is a little bit rarer. Back to Kent Hardison, who said, you know, I just thought it was my imagination. I thought I was crazy the first time I saw it, and it resembled Jesus. But no. Hardison said some of his customers over at Ma's Hot Dog House think the vine might be an indication that God is watching over the region. Yes, indeedy. Michelle Davis, somebody who goes to the hot dog stand, says maybe it's a sign of the times. There's been a lot going on in this area. In Kinston, North Carolina? That's about 100 miles east of Raleigh. I mean, I spent a month there one night. There's nothing in Kinston. There's there are tobacco auction houses and hog auction houses and people who see Jesus in kudzu, and that's about it. Kudzu was originally, by the way, imported from Japan and brought to this country to help prevent soil erosion. And it's called, here in the South, it's called the vine that ate the South. Anyway, Kent Hardison said that regardless of whether there's any deep meaning to the vine, kudzu makes an appropriate medium for Jesus to show up. Why? Well, Kent said, it doesn't matter what you do, it's going to be around, kudzu is. Ain't that a lot like Jesus? Oh, my Lord. And some of you people ask me why I continue to live in the South. I mean, would you get up and walk out of a comedy club that is just a laugh a second? I mean, would you? Whew. Jesus in the kudzu. Ma's Hot Dogs. Oh, the Central Intelligence Agency has a new head. It is General David Petraeus. He was unanimously confirmed. Uh-huh. We'll be right back. I don't care if it rains or freezes, long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car. My trials and tribulations, and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus, I'll go far. Riding down the thoroughfare, with a nose up in the air, a wreck may be ahead, but he don't mind.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour, Bruce writes, seeing Jesus comes from smoking weed that has been sprayed with Roundup. Yeah, okay. This hour is sponsored by Duckin' Over. That's what it says here, Duckin' Over. And Duckin' Over's message, Mike Malloy must survive. Ooh, okay. You know what's weird with this, Kathy? He's sponsoring all 3 hours tonight. Does he know that tomorrow is my birthday? Isn't that, I mean, I don't have his real name here. Duckin' Over. Mike Malloy must survive. Thanks, Duckin' Over. Kathy said, is that duck and cover? No, it's duck and over. Duck and over. Oh, damn. Okay. Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, God, I hate to get into this. I'll tell you what, before I get into it, let's do From Prairie 2. There's just so much depressing stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's just, oh, man. But did you know we're bombing Somalia now? It's I heard it on NPR today. It's a war being conducted by the CIA and who else? We're using drone aircraft the CIA and who? I don't know. That's one of the reasons you see Petraeus was confirmed as the head of the, isn't he the head of the CIA? That's right. And Panetta was moved to Defense Department. Isn't this fun? Anyway, Prairie 2 writes, the rich are just like them. He writes, the Greek Parliament has finalized the end of their country as a sovereign nation. And the entire place is now to be sold off lock, stock, and barrel. And the money, of course, will go to the bankers. The public assets will be sold for pennies on the dollar. And will end up in the hands of transnational corporations. Wall Street heard the dinner bell ringing. We're having Greek tonight! And the market closed up today sharply. Currency traders have reacted to the good news by driving up the euro and the U.S. dollar down. And it's headed, by the way, toward record lows. Republicans blame Obama for the weak U.S. dollar. Everyone knows weak is bad, right? No matter that we would be better off economically with a weak dollar, it's similar to having tariffs on imports. A weak U.S. dollar means imports from Europe and the Middle East are more expensive, but U.S. exports are much more competitive. Too bad we don't have anything to sell. Increasingly, exports from the U.S. to Europe are really just products from South American countries that don't have free trade with the EU, and they just make a quick stopover in the southern U.S. ports to have the paperwork stamped. The Federal Reserve has officially stopped buying U.S. Treasury bonds on the open market, and the price of bonds is falling and driving up interest rates. Not that interest is very high. Two-year bonds sold at Tuesday's Treasury auction will yield a whopping 0.395%. Paying nearly zero interest does keep the cost of borrowing low for the government. Even with the QE2 cover, the Fed will continue to spend $1 billion a day to replace bonds that mature. So the Fed will get money from the Treasury and spend it on the bond market. No, I don't know. I don't get this either. But Bruce is a financial whiz-bang, so I'm just reading what he wrote here. The interest we pay is expected to skyrocket after a default on the debt by Republicans in Congress, and we will be in a similar position as Greece. That is, if we continue to run the country with Wall Street bankers in charge. If we wake up to the fact that this is our country and not theirs, it could all be fixed overnight. The bankers, they can all go live in Greece for the rest of their short lives. Initial unemployment claims were down slightly last week, and home sales were up sharply in May. In many markets, home prices were up significantly, but mostly in condos where sellers can control inventory. Home prices are still at the same level they were 10 years ago, which represents trillions in lost wealth for the middle class. The rich, well, they've gained trillions over the same period. Funny how the economy can crash, but the people who own the business sector don't lose any money. And they make trillions instead. Maybe the so-called crash of the economy isn't the right word. Maybe the word looting of the economy would be more descriptive. The teabaggers know they've lost money on their houses and 401ks and the pension's gone, but they don't seem to notice where it went. Where did they think the rich got their money? Teabaggers are sure people who don't have any money took it from them, like poor people and teachers. They're sure the rich are just like them, except for all that money. PrairieNumeral2.com. No, I, you know, a lot of what he writes is way over my head, but I just do it on the air. The parts I don't understand, I go ahead and do it because I know a lot of people listening to this program are much smarter. And if they have a gripe with what Prairie 2 writes, they'll go to his website and they'll write to him and they'll say, what the hell are you talking about? You know, something like that. I guess I can't avoid it. Shiite militias have ramped up attacks on U.S. troops in Iraq, making June the deadliest month in 2 years for American forces. The goal here apparently is to prevent the U.S. military from extending its presence in the country past the end of this year. However, at least one unit of U.S. soldiers is being extended 30 days beyond its original December 2nd redeployment date. That's according to NBC News. They reported that today. The 900 soldiers of the headquarters unit of the 25th Infantry Division are now slated to leave January 2nd instead of December 2nd. The military official told NBC News that they have been extended so they can, quote, ensure the headquarters can continue the task, end quote, and because it is, quote, their responsibility to conclude the mission the right way, end quote. Oh, I see. So these 900 soldiers are going to have to stay there and absorb the casualties, the deaths, the destruction, the chunks of brain material blown away, legs and arms blown off, in order to conclude the mission the right way. You know the best way to conclude the mission? Just everybody pack up and leave. And then start paying Iraq reparations that will probably go on for the next 30 or 40 years. That would be the right way to leave, but or the right way to conclude the mission, but it's not going to happen. But it's all figured out here. There's a small but deadly group known as Hezbollah Brigades, believed to be funded and trained by, ooh, here's a surprise, Iran's Revolutionary Guard. There you go. The Iranians are behind this. All the more reason we should just nuke them, right? But this is the group that is causing most of the American deaths. In the latest American deaths, a senior U.S. official in Baghdad said today that three U.S. troops were killed a day earlier when a huge rocket known as an IRAM struck a remote desert base just a few miles from the Iranian border. And it goes on. It goes on and on and on. So when you hear talk about, I know we never hear talk about it. You know, you and I, we're not involved in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan, Libya and Somalia and Yemen. And no, there are just a few Americans, relatively speaking, and it's their families who suffer from the shock, the death of a family member, the dismemberment, the brain damage, and later on the PTSD, the homelessness, the sickness, the disruption in their lives, the divorce, the murder, the suicides, the child abuse. And why? Because George Bush decided he could. And Barack Obama decided he could too. We'll be back in a minute.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Duckin' Over. And Duckin' Over has a message. Mike Malloy must survive. Okay. Duckin' Over, thank you. I don't know, just seeing that in print, it just looked, Mike Malloy must survive. I agree. Maybe a little bit different meaning, but, you know. Thanks, Duckin' Over. I love the lead to this one. Joining a wave of unrest in Europe over government austerity measures, tens of thousands of British teachers and public sector workers walked off their jobs today to protest proposed changes to their pension plans. More than 10,000 schools were affected, as were universities, social security offices, courtrooms, airport customs desks, and other government operations. Union officials warned that the strike could be the first of a series of walkouts in the next few months, reflecting growing unhappiness. That's one way to put it. Over layoffs, salary freezes, tax increases, and a persistently sluggish economy. Much of the anger, according to the head of one of these unions, much of this anger and this frustration has to do with the feeling of helplessness and resentment at having to suffer from the mistakes of bankers and others who caused the economic crisis. The government, which is now in the hands of the conservatives, this union head said, the government is, quote, forcing some of the most vulnerable people in our society to pay for a crisis that was not of their making, end quote. Yeah. It's the same all over the place. So how much longer? When do workers, the ones that are still working in this country, I'm talking about the working class. I'm not talking about the paper shufflers. I'm not talking about the college professors, although some of them are in deep doo-doo too. I'm not talking about the, you know, the talking heads in media or the movie stars. I'm talking about us, you know, workers. People who actually do something for a living.
What do you do, Malloy? You just sit there and talk.
That's very true. That's very true. But it's something. What's it going to take? I mean, do you think that the workers in Britain consider themselves to be poverty-stricken? British school teachers and firefighters and police officers and postal workers and social security officers and court bailiffs and airport customs people. And do they get, no, they don't consider themselves to be poverty stricken. They're not homeless. They're not living in the streets. They're not on food stamps. That's this country. That's what's happening here. And Greece is another example. Who's next? When will it be Portugal's turn? When is Spain going to feel the lash of these bankers, these rotten bastards who caused this? This is astonishing. It's astonishing. Country after country being forced to absorb what these greedy bastards have done globally. It's amazing. It's good to see people take to the streets. It's good to see people say, no, goddammit, no, no, no. I'm not going to be held responsible for your manipulation of everything you can get your hands on, Mr. or Ms. Capitalists. The money, the job market, production, layoffs, pensions. You control it all, you filthy bastards. And so you gamble and you make millions, billions, trillions. And where does it come from? It gets sucked right out of the heart of these various countries, including ours. And what are we doing? What are we doing here? The issue, apparently, most pissing off the strikers in Britain today was the government's proposal to change their pension plans. Public pensions currently cost Britain $50 billion a year. That's chump change. I mean, it's chump change. That's what ExxonMobil makes in profits in a quarter and a half. And they're talking about all British pensioners, $50 billion. The government says that with an aging population, the current pension arrangement is unsustainable. Then why did you make it? First of all. Secondly, it would not be unsustainable if the economy was humming along and taxes were being paid and the wealthy and the corporations were forced to pay their share. It would not be unsustainable. It would be as sustainable as it's always been until the investment community decided, hey, listen, we got to change the game. I'm sick of this, you know, buy low, sell high. Let's change it. Let's turn it into a goddamn casino. Let's run roulette wheels and blackjack and keno. I mean, the 6 or 7 or 8 billion suckers on Earth, they can pay for it. We want some fun, man. Come on, let's figure out how to do this. There's a day of reckoning coming. It's not like Pat Robertson's day of reckoning. It's much worse. Sponsored by Ducking Over. Yeah, I got all of them saying that right. Ducking Over. Thank you, Ducking Over. His message, Mike Malloy must live. Oh, Lord. I agree. Thank you, Ducking Over. It's very kind. Sponsors another hour. Wow. Tomorrow is Canada Day. And I'll bet you there's not 1% of the American population that is aware of that. The only reason I know about it is because it happens to follow my birthday. July 1st is Canada Day. Or Fête du Canada. It was it used to be called Dominion Day. When I was a kid, it was called Dominion Day. You know, growing up in Toledo, we used to go up to Detroit, go across the Ambassador Bridge and hang out in Windsor and just say to ourselves, God, we're in a foreign country, but they all look like us. Except back in the day, the cars looked different. You know, a Ford or a Chevy made in Canada looked different. And you went to the gasoline station, and it wasn't in gallons. It was liters. And it was just like, whoa! You know, that was 50 miles north of Toledo. But anyway, Canada Day, it used to be called Dominion Day. They do the same thing on July 1st, pretty much that we do on July 4th here. It celebrates the anniversary of the enactment of the British North American Act in 1867, which united three British colonies into a single country called Canada within the British Empire. And it was changed, well, it says right here, changed from Dominion Day, oh, there you go, in 1982. That's the year that Canada gained full independence from the United Kingdom. I guess it's still part of the British Commonwealth of Nations, right? What is a real treat, if I believe what I say on television, is the fact that the recently married heir to the British throne and his lovely wife are touring in Canada this week. So, to our Canadian listeners, and we do have an abundance of Canadian listeners who I certainly appreciate. I appreciate the insights that they offer. Their take on what's going on down here. But anyway, to our Canadian listeners, happy Canada Day. Hope you have fun tomorrow. It's a national holiday, right? Yeah. No, Mike, it's just it's a national holiday. Long weekend. Good on you, mates. Trace amounts, according to the Guardian of the UK, trace amounts of radioactive substances have been found in urine samples taken from children from Fukushima City, which is 37 miles away from the nuclear power plant. Tests were conducted in May on 10 children between the ages of 6 and 16 by a Japanese civic group and ACRO, a French body that measures radioactivity. All 10 tested positive for tiny amounts of cesium-134 and cesium-137. The chief cabinet secretary, Yukio Edano, said he was concerned by the findings and the government would thoroughly examine the results. Yikes. Richard Wakeford, an expert in radiation exposure in Manchester, England, said he was not surprised that cesium had been found in Fukushima City residents, given the distance and direction the radiation plume had traveled. He said, what we're seeing here is residual cesium that will be around for quite a while. It's just horrible. What would you do if you were a parent? You know, some of us in this country may have a chance to find out what we would do if cesium-137 or some other isotope turns up in our children's urine. You realize what's going on in New Mexico. The Los Alamos nuclear facility. Lord, Lord, Lord. According to an expert, given the circumstances of what happened at Fukushima, the levels found in these children are not particularly alarming. The expert said ingestion could be prevented by avoiding contaminated food and milk. Oh, well, sure. But he added that produce contaminated at levels acceptable to the government would inevitably go on sale. Uh, Nanao Kamada, a professor emeritus of radiology, radiation biology at Hiroshima University, said, quote, this won't be a problem if people don't eat vegetables or other contaminated products, but it will be difficult for people to continue living in these areas. What they're talking about are the, in that instance, they're talking about two towns located 19 and 25 miles from the Fukushima Daiichi plant. But I mean, how do you deal with that? My two daughters, who are now in their 40s, lived about 25 miles from Three Mile Island back in, when was that, 78, when the incident occurred there. And so far, so good. Nothing obvious has happened to either one of them. They both have had children. But Three Mile Island was not Fukushima. I wonder what Pat Robertson has to say about that. I mean, that was a triple whammy to Japan. Is it because they practice the Shinto faith or Confucianism or, something other than Christianity? Pat Robertson hasn't weighed in on that one yet, has he? He did make the statement, though, like I mentioned last hour, that because of what happened in New York, the legislature there deciding that equal protection under the law even applied to people who happened to be gay and wanted to write a contract of marriage. Oh, my God. What does that mean? Well, it means that they're American citizens and have the same rights as Pat Robertson. But Pat Robertson doesn't see it that way, of course. He says that now, because we are acting like sodomites, and this dumb bastard, Sodom was destroyed because they were unfriendly to strangers. I mean, that was the mythology. That was the story. Kind of like, Zeus destroying something or Mercury running roughshod over, whatever. All these stories about gods and goddesses, they're very entertaining, they're very interesting, and I'm sure there are lessons that can be found in some of them. But other stories of gods and goddesses, whether they're Christian or Muslim or Greek or Roman or Chinese or Kenyan or Brazilian or, whatever the stories are, some of them do not contain little kernels of wisdom and insight. Some of them are just madness, just belching, bleating insanity. Like Lot's wife turning into a pillar of salt, and a couple of days later, his two daughters decide to have sex with him. That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. There's a good piece in the New York Times. Is it in tomorrow's paper or was it today's? I guess it was today's paper. About the whole world watching Greece as its parliament voted to pass a divisive package of austerity measures that could have some very serious ramifications for the entire global financial system. And Mark Mazower, who wrote this, he is a professor of history at Columbia University, He said it may come as a surprise that this tiny tip of the Balkan Peninsula could command such attention. He writes, we usually think of Greece as the home of Plato and Pericles, its real importance lying deep in antiquity. But this is hardly the first time that to understand Europe's future, you need to turn away from the big powers at the center of the continent, look closely at what is happening in Athens. For the past 200 years, Greece has been at the forefront of Europe's evolution. And he gives a little history, then, of Greece's War of Independence against the Ottoman Empire and what happened after the First World War. He writes, it is ironic that Greece was in the vanguard of resistance to the Nazis. In the winter of 1940-41, it was the first country to fight back effectively against the Axis powers, humiliating Mussolini in the Greco-Italian War while the rest of Europe cheered. And many cheered again a few months later when a young left-wing resistance fighter named Manolis Glezos climbed the Acropolis one night with a friend and pulled down a swastika flag that the Germans had recently unfurled. And now, almost 70 years later, that same Mr. Glezos was tear-gassed by the Greek police while protesting the austerity program. Think about that for a second, if you can. Anyway, as he points out, ultimately Greece succumbed to Nazi occupation. After Hitler's defeat, Greece found itself in the center of history again. In the front line of the Cold War in 1947, President Harry Truman used the intensifying civil war in Greece to galvanize Congress behind the Truman Doctrine and his commitment to American resources to fight communism. And that included in Greece. He says, and now today, after the euphoria of the 90s has faded and a new modesty sets in among the Europeans, it falls again to Greece to challenge the mandarins of the European Union and to ask what lies ahead for the continent. The European Union was supposed to shore up a fragmented Europe, to consolidate its democratic potential, and to transform the continent into a force capable of competing on the global stage. It is perhaps fitting that one of Europe's oldest and most democratic nation-states should be on the new front line, throwing all these achievements into question. For we are all small powers now, and once again, Greece is in the forefront of the fight for the future. Isn't that the truth? You hear from a lot of American commentators that Greece finds itself in the position it's in because its people are lazy. Its public workers are looking for a handout. They live way beyond their means. Why don't they say that about the Irish? Why don't they say that about the Americans? Why don't they say that about the Brits? Why is it the Greeks? Have you considered something? Probably the most solvent country in least likely to collapse in the group of so-called, well, what do I want to use here, Western or industrialized nations or whatever, is Canada. Have you noticed that? I mean, of all the countries that went bat guano during the 90s and then in the first decade of this century, you know, good old plain old Canada, right? Eh? You know, the butt of jokes, especially down here. Canada, what's up in Canada? Oh man, moose, you know. You know, we just stay up here, eh? And, you know, drink beer. Haha, isn't the joke on everybody else now? We'll be right back.
I'm a fan. Oh, how can you do that? Making me look bad. You're such a hose head. Yeah, well, take off.
Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white north.
okay, everyone, like, this is me on the drums.
Oh, get out. It is not.
It is so.
Stop
lying,
will you?
Take off, eh?
Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off.
Beauty, eh?
Like magic, eh? It's coming in.
Well, that's
like it was sung by angels.
Hey, Jose.
Yeah, what?
Guess what?
Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by, well, here's a surprise, Duckin' Over, who also sponsored the last hour. Thanks, Duckin' Over. His message, Mike Malloy must live, or Mike Malloy must live. Is it live or live? Mike Malloy must live. Thanks, Duckin' Over. That's it's a sentiment I certainly share, and thanks so much for the sponsorship. From Michael in Roswell, this is, regarding the situation in Greece and other countries is going to happen. It's already happened here. It's just that we don't care anymore. Michael writes, when Bolivia was required to turn over its water system to a subsidiary of Bechtel, remember that? Some of the money promised by the IMF was required to go to the Bolivian police for mostly American-made paramilitary equipment to help put down what have come to be described as IMF riots. The IMF anticipates widespread civil strife due to its austerity and privatization programs in exchange for high interest loans, which impoverish countries in perpetuity and requires part of the loan money to be used to crush heads, to suppress dissent over IMF policies. That's pure capitalism at work. The IMF's prime obligation is not international development, but rather enforcement of repayment of loans for its member banks, often through paramilitary force. That used to be called loan sharking and the protection racket. Now it's called international aid. Yeehaw. Isn't that the truth? Not just in Britain, where thousands of British teachers and public sector workers walked off the jobs today. In recent months, the Irish and Portuguese governments have been voted out of office on this tide of voter anger at their part in the financial upheavals and the austerity measures that were imposed. It's a situation that's not going to go away. I'm not surprised that we Americans are not more attuned to what's happening. That's because, I think, partly because, first of all, we have a commentariat class that does not get into this stuff. They will go on endlessly about a tragedy in Florida, a mother on trial for murdering her child, which is a tragedy, but it commands way too much attention. It is not a national news story. It is a family tragedy. It is a local law enforcement situation. It's horrible. But it's not a story that should be dominating news channels and network news. I don't mean to sound like a hard ass about that, but that's the truth. And I think part of the reason, obviously, you know this as well as I do, that the reason Americans are not more attuned to what is happening here is, first of all, we have this cacophony of noise from the teabaggers, the shills that have been organized into these phalanxes of morons by corporate capitalist America that have funded these organizations. The teabag groups who are comprised, you have to admit, I mean, if Michelle Bachmann is a teabag leader, then it's very clear, and she is, it's very clear that the teabag movement is comprised of morons, halfwits, jackasses. These are not people who are interested in saving America. These are people who are pissed off because they don't like blacks. They don't like minorities. They don't want anybody to disturb their little carefully manicured lives. Especially they don't like black people. But 10 of the craziest things Michelle Bachmann has ever said. Think progress. Put this together. At the November 2004 Education Watch, National Education Conference, this is a right-wing group of psychopaths, Bachmann said the normalization of homosexuality would lead to desensitization. She went on and said, very effective way to do this with a bunch of second graders is take a picture of the Lion King, for instance, and a teacher might say, do you know that the music for this movie was written by a gay man? So in other words, Bachmann warned the Lion King was gay propaganda. Who was that, Elton John?
One of them, yeah.
Second, Bachmann claimed abolishing the minimum wage would create jobs. Jesus. While testifying in front of the Minnesota Senate in 2005, Bachmann said, literally, if we took away the minimum wage, if conceivably it was gone, we could potentially virtually wipe out unemployment completely because we would be able to offer jobs at whatever level. This isn't even remotely true. Even simply reducing the minimum wage, as Paul Krugman has said, at best will do nothing for employment. Most likely it would actually be contradictory to increased employment. She's out of her goddamn mind. Bachmann claimed that scientists are supporters of intelligent design. She said at a 2006 debate, there are hundreds and hundreds of scientists, many of them holding Nobel Prizes, who believe in intelligent design. This, of course, was a flat-out lie. It's just a lie. It's just simply, there's not even an ounce of it, an inch of it, a millimeter of it, anchored in truth. It's just made-up garbage. But this is what Bachmann does. And her followers, the people in her home district, continue to re-elect her. What the hell kind of people live in that Minnesota district? I mean, are they all drooling, knuckle-dragging tree climbers who just wander around eating grass and staring at the moon? What the hell is this? Bachmann claimed Terry Schiavo was healthy. Remember her? Remember that horrible story? Not long after Terry Schiavo died, Bachmann said she would have voted for the Palm Sunday Compromise. Remember that? When they convened a session of Congress and Bush went from Texas, where he was on vacation, chopping up fire things. And I mean, the Congress involved it. Jesus, God. But she said she would have voted for the Palm Sunday Compromise because Schiavo was healthy. She said, well, she has brain damage. There was brain damage. There's no question. But from a health point of view, she wasn't terminally ill. An autopsy found that Schiavo had, or Schiavo, how do you pronounce it? Terry Schiavo had suffered irreversible brain damage, and her brain was, quote, according to the medical examiner, quote, profoundly atrophied. Now, of course, your average teabagger doesn't know what atrophied means and has just a slight guess at what profoundly means. Bachmann compared visiting Iraq to visiting the Mall of America. Mm-hmm. In 2007, Bachman returned from a junket to Iraq and told her colleagues, quote, there's a commonality there with the Mall of America in that it's on that proportion. There's marble everywhere. The other thing I remarked about was there is water everywhere. I mean, Jesus Christ. What is, and the media in this country are treating this woman as a serious political aspirant. What are they doing? Bachman claimed that carbon dioxide is harmless. Remember that? In 2008, a Stanford University scientist revealed, quote, direct links between increased levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and, quote, increases in human mortality, end quote. Globally, he found that as many as 20,000 air pollution-related deaths per year per degree Celsius may be due to this greenhouse gas. The next year, Bachman, who, among other things, is not a scientist, said that, quote, carbon dioxide is portrayed as harmful, but there isn't... But there isn't even one study that can be produced that shows that carbon dioxide is a harmful gas. We'll be right back.
I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted. And then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I let myself worry? Wondering what in the
Michelle Bachman song. What does she play? American Girl? She ought to play this one. Number 7. Bachman called for a congressional witch hunt. Pivoting off the news of Barack Obama's alleged relationship to former Weather Underground member William Ayers. Remember all that? And his former pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Remember all that? That seems so Glenn Beckish, doesn't it? You remember him. Bachman accused candidate Obama of having anti-American views, and she then suggested that congressional liberals, including Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, ought to be subject to an expose by the media because of their views. She said, quote, I think people would love to see like that, she told a stunned Chris Matthews. Jesus Christ. Number 8, Bachman suggested a gay singer should repent after getting cancer. Huh? We're talking about Melissa Etheridge here. Bachman saw Melissa Etheridge's cancer as a teachable moment. She said, quote, unfortunately, she is now suffering from breast cancer, so keep her in your prayers. This may be an opportunity for her now to be open to some spiritual things now that she is suffering with that physical disease. You know, she is a lesbian. Oh, my God. I wonder if she says the same thing about her half-sister. What a psychopath. What is wrong with you people in her district in Minnesota? Do you do this for sport? Do you think this is funny to send a clinically insane woman like this, not to mention a liar, to the Congress? Are you out of your goddamn minds, you people who vote her in? What is wrong with you? Or are you all like her? Well, there's the answer. Of course you are. Bachman, number 9, boasted about breaking the law. In advance of the 2010 national census, Bachman told the Washington Times that she would break the law by not completing the form. She said, quote, "I know for my family, the only question we will be answering is how many people are in our home. We won't be answering any information beyond that because the Constitution doesn't require any information beyond that." Jesus Christ. And number 10, Bachman claimed that Glenn Beck could solve the debt crisis. During a February trip to South Carolina, this February, Bachman told a South Carolina audience, quote, "I think if we give Glenn Beck the numbers, he can solve the national debt." Where do these people come from? What kind of a sewer opens up and these people come floating to the top? I mean, my God. You know, we pay some attention to... oh, by the way, this hour has been sponsored by Duckin' Over. Yes, it has been. His message, Mike Malloy must live. God, you know, it's really cool, but it's kind of creeps me out a little bit. No, I don't mean it creeps me out. I mean it when you see those words. Well, take your name, write it down, and put past your name, must live. Ah! Oh, well, thanks, Duckin' Over, for the sponsorship. But this madness, the reason that I focus a bit, as much as I do, on this psychopath is because I'm completely flummoxed as to how some person like this rises politically to a level where she can run for president of the United States. No, she doesn't have an ice cube's chance in hell of being elected. But the fact that she can get support, she can get money, she can get votes, she can get mainstream media attention, she can go on the air with Bob Schieffer, for Christ's sake, with Chris Matthews, with Wolf Blitzer. And the other heavy hitters talk about her as if she were a serious candidate. I listen to these people, these commentators on MSNBC and CNN talking about her spectacular arrival on the scene of a Republican candidate. I worked at CNN and I know you write copy for these anchor people. You sit there and you write it and it goes to the editor. And I mean, if somebody gave me a story to write on the rundown about Michelle Bachman, I would say, two words, goddamn freak, nut out of her mind. And then I'd probably be fired, but. From Gordon, Oklahoma City, Mike. Marion Pat Robertson's assertion that all societies fail because of acceptance of gay people is nothing more than a false analogy and an empty whine for attention. And you spell that money. Another crazy mouthpiece of Reconstruction theology is Sally Kern here in Oklahoma, who has made similar claims. I suspect she is only parroting people like Robertson. Societies change all the time, and so do governments. I could make a similar claim about Rome. This once mighty empire fell, and Europe plunged into horrid conditions known as the Dark Ages after the acceptance of Christianity. A stronger case can be made by my analogy than Robertson's. I wonder if he would like to engage in a game of connect the dots. Perhaps the problem is not gay people at all. The real enemy is people like Robertson and his followers, especially those cheering and agitating for the apocalypse. Give him hell. Gordon, Oklahoma City. P.S. Now pardon me while I go rape some angels. Ooh, Gordon. You're going to be turned into a pillar of salt yourself, boy. Gotta love Gordon. All right, we'll take a break and come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. That's me. Welcome back. Hour three of the Malloy program tonight. It's about 7 past the hour. We'll take some phone calls now if you want to call in. 877-99-MALLOY. This hour is sponsored by, well, here's a surprise, Duckin' Over. My goodness. And his message is, Mike Malloy must survive. Duckin' Over. Thank you very much. All three nights, hours tonight, Duckin' Over has sponsored. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. From the Sydney Morning Herald, down under, Greece is just the beginning. The article is it quotes Reserve Bank, I guess that is in Australia, maybe it's like our Federal Reserve, Reserve Bank Director Warwick McKibben told a Melbourne conference the global economy is facing what he calls a slow-motion train wreck, with Greece only the first nation to be hit. Referring to the most recent global economic crisis as a mere blip, he said the coming crisis could undo the mining boom, I guess that's going on in Australia, and bring on inflation of the kind not seen since the 70s. Professor McKibben told the Melbourne Institute conference dozens of European countries now had gross government debts on track to exceed 60% of GDP. He said, quote, Japan is forecast to be 200% of GDP. The U.S. is forecast to be over 100% of GDP. They're talking about debt here. He said, at zero interest rates, that can be sustained. But at 5% interest rates, countries have to put aside 5% of their GDP every year just to service the debt. That is not sustainable. He went on to say, already consumers aren't spending and investors aren't spending because of the tax increases that are in prospect. Oh, he's a right winger. He adds, Greece, Portugal, and Ireland don't just need to have their debts written off. They need to have 30% to 40% depreciation of their real exchange rate. He goes on, there are two ways to do that. Either pull out of the euro and depreciate by 40%, or have deflation of 40% over the next 12 months. He adds, I do not believe any society can survive having a 40% deflation that's been imposed by the International Monetary Fund and the European Central Bank. Okay, he's not a right-winger. He said that as the U.S. created more dollars to inflate away its debt repayment obligations, countries that are linked to the dollar, including China, India, and parts of Latin America, are going to suffer 1970s-style inflation. He said, in India, inflation is 9%. In China, it is 6%. That inflation is pushing up resource prices for now, but it will have to be brought under control with much higher interest rates. So from down under, Peter Schilling, who is that a, no, that's not his name, McKibben. Why did I say Peter? His name is Warwick McKibben. Warwick McKibben, Professor McKibben. A train wreck. That's not very good to hear, is it? No, it isn't. Let's do some phone calls. Kelly is driving in Minnesota, listening on Sirius. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, Mike. It's a real honor to talk to you. I've been a long-time listener.
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to let you know that Michelle Bachmann, of course, being from Minnesota, that's something of a gerrymandered district up there that, you know, she seems to get reelected constantly. We had a real great, real good candidate running against her this year, Terrell Clark, and why she didn't win is beside me. I have no idea.
Do you think the election might have been manipulated?
Nah, well, you know, in this day and age,
you never know.
Could well have been, but there really wasn't any evidence of it. She just outraised, you know, the money issue, I think is probably it. I mean, I don't know. She gets so many nationwide contributors.
That's true, yeah.
That give her so much money.
Well, you know, we have murder clowns here in Georgia that represent districts all over Georgia. I mean, I think we only have, out of our congressional delegation, which is, what, Kathy, 14 or 15 members of Congress here, I think we only have two that most normal people are not embarrassed about. Also, the only difference between our nut cases and Michelle Bachmann is none of our nut cases are capable of organizing a campaign for president. And obviously Bachmann is. So, you know, I think she's just an absolute, train wreck, to use the term I was just using. But good Lord, anybody wants to compare nut cases that are in Congress, Georgia would be right up there in the top two or three also. Trust me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mike. And I drive truck. I've been down to Georgia. God love you people for what you deal with down there.
It's just madness, Kelly. Are you working tonight? Are you driving?
I'm on my way home. I just got the truck parked. I turned my 3,000 for the week. I'm heading home.
So. Oh, well, good for you. Good for you. All right, sir. Drive safely. Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Take care. Remember when we worked at WLS in Chicago? My God, we used to get a lot of truckers. Because it's a power. It was a 50,000-watt uninterrupted signal. Used to be able to say clear channel. All, you know, small c, clear, small c channel. But then clear channel, capital C, capital C. The corporation that used to be, what was it? You remember, Kathy. It used to be J-Corp. They took the name clear channel. But clear channel used to mean just a signal, a frequency, like WLS, it was 8-something. Oh, my God, I've forgotten. Here in Atlanta, AM 750 WSB, that was a clear channel. And, you know, ostensibly nobody else could broadcast on that frequency. And as a result, the signal got out all over the country, especially the Midwest like that. All the truckers that used to go across Interstate 90, Interstate 94, into the upper Midwest, all the way to the Rockies, all the way back to New Jersey. My God, we used to get phone calls from New Jersey from one radio station. 890. That's what WLS was, 890. Oh, but I digress. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Get ready for the revolution. I think we're getting close.
Boy, it sure smells like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, when you have a Michelle Bachmann coming out saying she wants to get rid of minimum wage, she wants to make tax breaks for the rich permanent, no Social Security, no Medicare, and no regulations, that is all-out war.
It is.
And they don't even hide it, Mike.
No.
They're coming right out and saying it. And, you know, to me, I don't know what more it's going to take that they want to turn this country into a third world country, and you know they'll go by any means necessary to do it. So when you have this kind of a agenda in your face, to me, you know, you just can't sit back anymore.
No,
you know, this is war. It really is.
I hear you.
And you know, you have the Koch brothers. Now this group of individuals, to me, they're going to need a beatdown somewhere. They're coming out and funding this war against the middle class and the working people. Now, in my opinion, they have to be singled out and brought down any way possible because they need to be made an example of. These people are out to take everything we work for, Mike, and they haven't worked a day in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
yeah.
You know, my feeling is, from what I see and the way I feel right now, you know, I don't know how much more I can take. I mean, this is in your face.
Hey, Mark, hold on a second. Let me do a break here. We'll come back and chat for another minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
astray. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Yeah, we hope. 21 past the hour. We're talking with Mark in San Francisco. Okay, we're back, Mark.
Okay, Mike. Well, I basically laid out how I feel, and I really think it's going to take some action. I don't have any faith in voting for politicians that are going to take on this fascist corporate takeover of our country. And I'm really looking at something big happening with a movement from the people to stop it, because I don't want to die from a million cuts as the Republicans take us apart bit by bit. I mean, I just can't stomach it anymore.
I hear you.
You know, and you look at what they're doing with the debt ceiling, you know, holding us hostage and blackmailing us. I mean, that should be enough to say, hey, you know, we're sick of you people. You know, they brought us into these wars, they spent all our money. And Bush destroyed the economy, and now they want us to pay for it, and they want to keep going down this road. Mike, what they want to do is give them more tax breaks, so even if we do fix the deficit, they don't care about the deficit, they'll run it up again, and they'll just cut our programs till they get nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they're going. And unless we stop it and stand up against these people, we're just going to die of a million cuts. I don't see any other end to it unless we take it into our own hands and start calling these people out.
Loud and clear, Mark. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate what you had to say.
Okay, brother.
All right, take care. Yeah, and the first thing in order to bring about the kind of change it's going to take, I mean, you know, 50-some million of us voted for change with the election of Barack Obama, and we were put in the trick bag once again. So, I you know, unless Bernie Sanders were running for president, I can't think of a politician on the national political scene. Oh, I know Kucinich, and there might be one or two more, but you know what I'm saying. And Kucinich is a Democrat, and Democrats the Democratic Party to me now is just absolutely useless. I'm still on the mailing list of Democratic National Committee and a couple other ones, and you know, they use my first name just like they use your first name. I'm just on a mailing list to them. I'm nobody to them, just like you're nobody to them. They want me to open my wallet, and I'd love to, but there's nothing in there except some moths and maybe an old roach. Giggle, giggle, wink, wink. But it's just unbelievable. To think, I mean, it's hard to believe. It's impossible to believe. To think that there is just the Democrat. I mean, as far as change is concerned, like Mark just said, if you want to work change through the political system, I mean, are you kidding me? When the political system is owned outright, turned over to capitalist America by the Supreme Court, they own it. It's been a long time coming. It's been about. You know, they made a couple of attempts back early part of the last century, the middle of the last century, and it wasn't until just recently that the whole damn thing was given to the corporatists, the capitalists. It's theirs now. You and I don't have an Ice Cube's chance in hell. Come on, come on. Who are we kidding about going to the ballot box? Please. You know, if you have any doubts about that, go to bradblog.com and just look at anything on his website. Go back through the archives. I mean, is there somebody out there who still believes in the power of the ballot box? You've got to be kidding yourselves. So what's left? Well, national strike. You know, a couple, 3 days where nobody does anything. I mean, that is so, it's so un-American to think that way. Un-American in the sense it's way too zen to do nothing. To just contemplate the nothingness. We couldn't do that. We're Americans. We're get up and go. We eat our own bootstraps. You know, we're just, rah! And when we're not doing that, we're sitting around going, ooh, is there going to be a terrorist attack today? Ooh, well, ooh, gosh, ooh, 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 ooh. I'll tell you what, the only thing that's ever going to get the attention of the capitalists that are running this country and this planet is exactly what you see going on in North Africa, in the Middle East, in Greece, to a lesser extent, but still happening in Britain, occasionally in France. I think something is about to explode in Portugal, in Spain, possibly Ireland. And what are Americans going to do? I mean, the Canadians really have it good. They can just, you know, fix a great big bowl of popcorn and sit north of the border and watch these crazy bastards that live south of them. They're not in trouble. Oh, I know there's some talk about this freak Harper. Is it Harper? Who's a right winger, but I don't think the Canadian people will let him get to the point that a George Bush got to, or a Ronald Reagan got to, or what's his name over in the UK. I just don't think that's going to happen with our neighbors in the far north. So, the United States, there's 330 million of us. And you'd be hard-pressed to find 300,000 people that would get off their asses, get off the couch, and take to the streets, if to do nothing else, to raise a middle finger to the corporatists, to the capitalists, and say, no, you're not going to continue to do this. No. Of course, 300,000 people, that would mean nothing. 30 million people in the streets, and the whole rancid game stops.
Doing talk radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering names and daisy chains and glass. Got to keep the
25 before the hour. We want to play a little bit of sound for you now from Joe Scarborough's program this morning. By the way, this hour is sponsored by, well, here's a surprise, Duckin' Over. Just kidding. Duckin' Over has sponsored all 3 hours tonight, and man, we do appreciate it. Thank you very much. He has a message, too. Mike Malloy must survive. Thanks, Duckin' Over. That's a wonderful sentiment, and the money helps, too. Anyway, if you ever watch Joe Scarborough's program in the morning on MSNBC, and I used to watch it a lot. I don't anymore just because it's become so irritating. And the reason it's become irritating, it's the men on this program are like a bunch of spoiled ass frat boys sitting around in a locker room someplace. Now, I'm not talking about their guests. I'm talking about a little group of regulars. They do have some interesting guests. But the regulars on the program, they're just like a bunch of grown-up or overgrown 13-year-olds. It's unbelievable to see adult men acting like these snotty, arrogant 13-year-olds. No offense to 13-year-olds. It just became too much for me. And poor Mika Brzezinski, who sits there, and her expression runs the gamut from pissed off to pouty. It's just amazing watching her navigate, negotiate with all this testosterone, this juvenile testosterone that just about drowns her every morning. On the one hand, on the other hand, she seems to really like it. Like, hey, I'm one of the boys. No, you're not, Mika. You really, really, really are not one of the boys. But there they sit. And it's just it's become the most ridiculous ass program ever. Well, they had this guy on, this morning. He's a contributor to MSNBC, Mark Halperin, who I think possibly is Matt Drudge's boyfriend. I'm not sure. But he has nothing but sweet nothings to say about Matt Drudge all the time. He co-wrote a book oh, what the hell was the name of it? It was about the 2008 presidential election campaign. And he just ripped Elizabeth Edwards to pieces. I mean, the attack on her was just outrageous. But he's a punk. By any definition of the word, he's just a smarmy little punk. To that extent, he fits in very nicely with this crew of juveniles that infest this morning at 3 hours on MSNBC. It's just, I mean, Jesus God, who came up with putting Joe Scarborough on the air? And it's gotten progressively worse. So this morning, he uses a common word. I'm not going to, you know, if you're a program director at one of our affiliates, let me just apologize in advance. I don't know what you get your, why you would get upset because of the language I usually use on this program. But here's the soundbite from MSNBC, the Joe Scarborough program this morning. It's coming.
Are we in the 7 second delay today?
Oh, Lord.
I wanted to characterize how I thought the president behaved. I thought he was kind of a dick yesterday.
Oh my God. Delay that.
Alexa. It was the wrong button? What's wrong with
you? I'll tell you what I think of you, but you don't know what button to push.
It's our fault.
No, joking aside, this is not a pro forma apology. It's an absolute apology.
Yeah.
Heartfelt to the president and to the viewers. I became part of the joke, but that's no excuse. I made a mistake.
Oh, shut up.
I apologize.
So he calls the president a dick. Well, what is left? What is left to call this president? I am not a defender of Barack Obama's policies, but this kind of juvenile white boy crap is really starting to get to me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I just feel like I'd like to take Mark Halperin outside the MSNBC studios and pants him. You know, just take his drawers down, and you bet your ass he wears those big old bloomery underwear. Just pants him and let him stand there with his sport coat and his tie and, you know, with his pants down around his ankles and let him appear to be the kind of screwball that he really is.
The president's a dick.
Oh, I mean, please. Oh, chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. Outrage, outrage. Ooh. And then the camera switches over to the control booth at MSNBC, and the story now is that they had a new executive producer or a new line producer in there who didn't know where the 7 second delay dump button is. Oh, yeah, sure, of course. That's A. B. I mean, why is everybody making such a big deal about this? And there was a big deal made about it. Well, what's the big deal? Who hasn't used that word in referencing a man, a male? Oh, he's such a dick. I mean, come on. And with the kind of the degeneration of discourse in this country over the past 10 years, they would get upset. Somebody would get upset. Apparently, MSNBC... What do I have? There. Have they suspended this freak? This little, they have, Kathy? I mean, suspended him for what? I'm not defending him. But it's just juvenile white boy, early morning garbage. Who cares? I don't know what their ratings are. How many people watch that program? And then the White House has to respond, the press secretary, Jay Carney. He says an off-color remark about Obama by Mark Halperin was inappropriate. He is also a Time magazine editor-at-large, Halperin. Well, probably not very much longer. He was talking about Obama's performance at a White House news conference on Wednesday. That was the one that the, what was his name? Writer for the Washington Post referred to it as that Obama just got all feisty and just real tough. What the hell did Obama say? White House spokesman Jay Carney said the comment was inappropriate. An inappropriate thing to say about any president. Carney also said he had expressed that sentiment to network executives. MSNBC suspended him indefinitely after he apologized. There are some reports out that Halperin was fired. I don't know. I really don't care. The only reason this came to my attention is because, you know, I wasn't watching this program this morning, but, you know, I'm up this morning and, you know, it's like 9 o'clock and all of a sudden it's on CNN and then it's over here and it's over there. I'm like, what? And it's on the web and it's, you know, the cutout is already there and it's YouTube and it's this and it's that. And Mark Halperin, of all people, who is, you know, he calls the president a dick. I'll call him a punk. He's just a punk. He's an absolute nobody. Like Matt Drudge. Matt Drudge scours through other people's work and puts links up at his website. And then sits there and goes, 8 billion hits since this morning. And then I read this piece that there's not a news director on earth that doesn't go to Drudge's website. Ooh, really? Gosh, that's really something, huh? What a bunch of jerks. I mean, just an absolute. But if you want to see white boy juvenile delinquency in of a certain form, every morning, Monday through Friday, with this poor Mika Brzezinski sitting there. And I'm not saying poor her like I have sympathy for her. She's there because she wants to be. But it just it's like high school. If you watch this, it's like sophomores and juniors. This crew, one of their people is a former Boston Globe sports columnist who was fired for plagiarism. And the other one, what's that young guy that sits in there? Who now has his own program, who has all the depth of a mud puddle. And then you have Scarborough himself, who's just one of the most irritating television presences I've ever seen. And then Mika Brzezinski, tweet, tweet, you know, trying to be Mama Hen. And she plays that mommy role. It's just, oh, please. MSNBC, for Christ's sake, is that the best you can do in the morning? Apparently it is. So, Mika Brzezinski. And, you know, if you have any empathy for the kind of struggle women have in media, no matter how much of a ditz you may think Mika Brzezinski is, you can't help but feel that empathy as she's sitting there surrounded by these jack-legged, half-witted, 50-something frat boys, usually all white, trying to act like, you know, she's part of the program. We'll be right back.
Playing with my heart, and she's playing with my mind, and I don't mind, I don't mind, no, I don't mind, I don't mind, no, I don't mind.
This hour is sponsored, like the other two tonight, by Duckin' Over, whose message is very simple. Mike Malloy must survive. Duckin' Over, thank you very, 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 very much for the 3 hours of sponsorship tonight. It was very kind and very generous of you. Thank you. Back to the calls. Connie is in Seaside, California. Hello, Connie.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you. I just wanted to tell you that you have a really good show tonight. I'm enjoying it myself.
Well, thank you.
But you do know, you just said I live in California and I do have a legal script, so about right at the time that your show comes on is the time I medicate.
Well, good for you twice.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, I wanted to tell you that I'm a member, and I always try to get on your chat room when I can't, but your guy and I are trying to fix that. And I wanted to say something about Kathy's diary, because I couldn't write a comment.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Sure.
I mean, it's not quite, you know, the subject that you're on, but, you know, Gaddafi is really he's got to be in the Hague soon. This man is just a monster. And what's happening to women is just horrific. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just, and what CNN did is just beyond belief. My husband and I, we got rid of
Oh, wait, let me just, in case people don't know, Kathy wrote a piece the other day about CNN using a cell phone video taken by one of their female reporters that allegedly showed, even though they blurred it up, the rape of a woman by Libyan soldiers loyal to Gaddafi. And what CNN did was blur out the picture, but allowed the audio of this woman writhing in agony and moaning and saying, I think there was a translator there, right, Kathy? Saying, don't stop, don't do it again. I can't take it. So Kathy, who writes all the blogs and has for the past year and a half at MikeMalloy.com, because I've just stopped for a while, even the ones that say Mike's blog, Kathy writes those, all of those, Kathy writes. And that got an awful lot of comments. So just so people know, Connie.
Yeah, she's a really good writer, too. I want to compliment her.
She is.
But I just wanted to have that down for my comment that I just think he's a monster and he belongs in the Hague.
Well, he does. And
yesterday.
I don't think that bombing and killing Libyans is the way to do this.
I don't either, Mike.
And that's why. And also in doing that, Obama is violating the law. When a president violates the law, it used to be that they were subject for impeachment. Of course, we didn't impeach George W. Bush, so how can we impeach Obama?
So when is it all going to end? Probably in a revolution like you're talking about. But I just wanted to tell you that there are those of us out here. You said at the beginning of your show that you understand if people can't hang on. Well, there are those of us that listen to all 3 hours and enjoy every minute of it.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you, Connie.
And I always wanted to know, why do you always wear black? And I'll say goodnight.
Okay. Thanks, Connie. I appreciate you checking in. I do the same reason that... Oh God, I'm drawing another blank. Who is the country singer that always wore, Johnny Cash. I just couldn't think there, Kathy. I'm sorry. Johnny Cash said years ago, Jesus, back in the 60s, he said, yeah, I'll wear black and I'll continue to wear black until this war in Vietnam is over. And I wear black simply because I don't know. I have no idea, but I've tried, you know, wearing khaki slacks or, you know, it's to the point where when my soon-to-be 7-year-old daughter draws a picture of me, and this has been going on since was in preschool when she was 4, she always drew a picture of me in a black T-shirt and either black jeans or blue jeans. I don't know. It's been going on for about 25 years. You know, I said 30 years. I said a long time ago that I'm the one who started the black shirt, blue jean thing. I was doing it back in the 70s when there were still a lot of leftover hippies who were dressed in all these flowery, pretty shirts and pants. And stuff. You know, and I just went for the tight jeans and the black top, and everybody stole my idea. You know, my fashion thing. Yeah, okay. Ian is in Williams Lake, British Columbia. Hello, Ian.
Hey, Mike. I can't believe it, man. I am so honored to talk to you.
My pleasure, Ian.
I've spent a lot of time in my truck, and I try to time my jobs so that I can hit your show, and when I miss it, I'm disappointed. Thing is, you know what? I tell you, you know, Jesus, man, I'm just beside myself just to get to talk to you here.
Well, well, it's very kind. I mean, I appreciate it. I love our Canadian audience. The fact that we reach folks in the Great White North. Was there anything in particular that you wanted to say, Ian?
Well, sort of. Like, I follow this American, you know, political scene via your show, and it's just bizarre to me
and
totally entertaining. You know, these Republican candidates in this race, you know, it's better than the Comedy Channel up here to listen to. You know,
I know.
I sometimes I gotta hold my stomach, like when you play sound clips and stuff. My main thing is you are much appreciated and you're very gracious to Canadians.
Well,
and you know, and so the thing is, I just want to tell you, keep doing what you're doing. You're the one thing out there that is kind of, I feel like you're plugging the dike with your finger.
Well, thanks, Ian. That's very kind of you to say, and I hate to cut you off, but you hear that music? We're almost out of time. Ian, call back anytime. I do appreciate your comments. Those are very kind. I'll see you tomorrow night, folks. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.